I miss a green, for example, I'm already upset. When I find my ball in the bunker, I'm really upset. And when I find my ball in a
fried egg.
The dreaded fried egg.
Fried egg lie, I'm about ready to run off the golf course.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another edition of the Fried Egg Podcast. Today I am joined by Brendan Porath of SB Nation and Sean Martin of the PGA Tour. Welcome on, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Andy, thanks for having me. Good to be back on.
Yeah, I'm coming live from my parents' house.
So am I playing the role of Tron today? Is that what's going on?
Oh.
Not possible.
I don't think you would keep your job if you were playing the role of Tron.
Andy, I'm buoyed with enthusiasm over here with potential Cavs signing the Bulls legend, Dwayne Wade. Looks like they're going to get, Bulls legend. Sounds like he's coming tomorrow. Very, very big developments over here for this Cavs fan.
Very happy that he's not on this team. John Greenberg, who writes for that Athletic, was taking pictures yesterday at Bulls Media Day, and I was laughing out loud. He was taking pictures. He's like, "Name this bull. Who's this guy?" no clue. I'm a huge basketball fan. I have no clue who half our team is. But you can have old D Wade. Chicago's still paying him $13 million of his $20 million salary. So just our great front office. But he'll be okay in 20 minutes a game role.
Yeah, 20 minutes, 20 games maybe, 25 games. I don't know. We'll see.
So, big week, and season's over. We got this 1 week break that's not even a real break, and then the next season starts. So, figured we'd talk a little bit about 2016-2017 season. Figure start with the FedEx Cup and Tour Championship. So, Xander, X gave it to everybody. Again, 23-year-old with now two Tour wins. It's shoo-in for Rookie of the Year. And kind of joins this elite company of young Americans. Where do you guys see Xander and his ceiling?
It's going to be interesting to see what happens because it's just going to be, you get on a roll, and ever since the U.S. Open, he was on a roll, and then, when that new season starts, you almost have to adjust. He gets in to the U.S. Open, and that's out of nowhere a little bit. Then he wins Greenbrier, and, that's cool. And then he finishes top 20 in all these big events, which, but then the season starts over, and it's when you play a good front nine, and then you make the turn, and for some reason, you're like, all right, I got to get back in. I really need to focus again. You sometimes lose it at the turn. The new season starts, you almost have to reset and refocus, and that's going to be the hardest part for him. But he's played so well in so many big events. He's got top 20s in the U.S. Open, the Open Championship, Bridgestone, three playoff events, and then won that. He is a big game hunter, it seems, but it's going to be interesting, almost like after Spieth, after 2015, how you respond and how you bounce back that following season. That's the hard part.
He seems like one of these, while much less hyped and less publicized, he seems like another one of these young guys who are these finely tuned machines, to get the maximum out of everything he can. He's a little robotic, and I don't mean that as a derogatory comment, but he just seems so finely tuned. I don't know what his ceiling is. It just seems, I don't know what the word is. Nothing really seems to get to him. Sean was saying, it doesn't matter the stage. You said he was shaking, and it looked like it on that last putt in Atlanta. But just playing in a field of the top 30 guys, it didn't matter, or Bridgestone, or at the U.S. Open. He's only 23. I don't know. It's hard to say what his ceiling is, just because I think measuring a player's ceiling this day and age is just a hard thing in general, because there is so much parity, and it's deeper than ever. It's hard to say, ceiling is a major, making a Ryder Cup, is that a measurement? Is it like winning once a year. Like, it's hard to say. I think just saying, you know, measuring a ceiling this day and age is really hard thing to do.
Yeah.
Go
ahead, Sean.
The one thing I like about it, and the biggest adjustment for him is that, you know, he talks about how he's an underdog all his life. He's not the biggest guy. You know, he went to Long Beach State, then transferred to San Diego State. And his caddy, Austin Kaiser, was his teammate there and said, the coach always hammered them. You guys are underdogs. You have to work harder. You don't have the advantages. And then he comes out on tour. He's an underdog. At the U.S. Open, he's an underdog. But now, like, he's no longer an underdog. No one's going to be like, oh, Xander Schauffele, who we don't know who he is. Like, he's got to get used to now no longer being an underdog. And he doesn't have that motivation anymore, sort of.
Martin come with that college intel, you know, quotes from the college coach is just on that, you know, in that memory deck up in his head. I think, like, nothing else. It's just one of the most badass names on tour. It's just endless possibilities with nicknames and puns. It's just, I hope he's, like, prominently featured for years to come.
Yeah, somebody on Twitter, I forgot who it was, replied back, like, I was really hoping that you were going to go with killing me softly. and like, I mean, I hope he's leading, like, something soon so I can use that, because it's probably the best headline of all time. But, you know, the thing, he didn't do anything crazy on the web last year, and then he was one of the last ones in from the web finals. But I think one of the more underrated things about what he's done is that he's done all this, like, he's from California, and he's done all this away from playing on Poe. And, you know, you'd have to think that the fall series and the early season next year, getting all these starts, he could get off to a hot start for this year playing, you know, around his hometown and courses and climate that he's familiar in. The other thing that I find really impressive is, like, the U.S. Open. I mean, the guy was in it the whole way. Like, it you know, from round one through the final round, like, he was right there. Like, there was no, like, it wasn't like he backdoored with, like, a 63 on Sunday to get into the top five. But he was there the whole time, and, you know, he was in the moment. And that's really impressive with, like, what he's done when he's gotten the chance to close.
The Bermuda grass thing is such a strong take, because I moved from California to Florida 11 years ago, and I still can't chip well out of Bermuda. And that's a huge adjustment. Mm-hmm. Bermuda rough is so hard.
It's
relatable, huh? You can relate to Xander and his struggles?
I mean, I haven't won the Tour Championship, but I know what it's like.
And I know Greenbrier is not the easiest, or isn't the hardest course, but it seems like he's built for tough courses with his game. He's long, he's pretty straight, he's really strong tee to green, played well at Quail Hollow, played well at Erin Hills, obviously, he played well at East Lake. I think he's one of those guys that when it gets, the difficulty gets ratcheted up a little, he could be, you know, he's kind of, that's what he's built for. So
he started the season 379th in the world. He's finished 32nd. So, I mean, you guys think he's like a regular top 50 guy now? We're going to see him and everything, WGCs and all that?
He's a big game hunter. That's where you get the points.
Yeah, he's in everything now, too. It makes it a lot easier to stay in the top 50 when you're in all the WGCs and all the majors. Yeah. It's like, I mean, free points. You know, it's crazy that you look at the top five in the FedEx Cup and four of the five are under the age of 25. I mean, the youth movement is fully on in golf, and it seems like I had a subscriber write me a lengthy email about it, but talking about how the prime of a golfer no longer is like 33, 34, 35, and now when somebody's past 27, you know, their major championship clock is ticking. I mean, what do you guys think about kind of the changing landscape? Do you think it's getting, you know, the major in terms of, you know, career length? Are we going to be looking at younger and shorter careers?
I want to throw one stat out there real quick that I saw. It was from ShotLink. This was the 18th win by a guy 25 or under, because Xander is in that group. The second most since they kept age records in 1970 was 10. That was in 2000, and that's because Tiger had 9 of them. So this is like a totally unprecedented year. But I do think, like you said, your guys are going to be, they're winning younger. Winning is stressful. I think people don't give that enough credit. So you're dealing with a lot of stress at a young age. The modern swing it's so violent. That puts a lot of stress on the body. So I think you have guys who make a lot of money and are under a lot of stress. And I think definitely the career is going to move forward a little bit, and guys are going to be done at an earlier age. I almost think you're not going to have Kenny Perrys who start their career at 40 and win all their titles at 40. You need to win early and win often.
Yeah, I mean, I think like a Kisner type is really the exception to the rule these days. I think there's still different ways to get it done. I just think the predominant route is going to be, you know, I had that stat too, those 18 wins from players under 25. I think that's kind of the new norm. Maybe that's what's kind of, taking it to the extreme. But I think, the under 30, under 27 crowd is really going to own the week-to-week PGA Tour. And I go back to what you were telling me about the Western AM, Andy, and how you were out there. And it's like just these practice rounds. Even like 17-year-old, 18-year-old, like 20-year-olds, and how they're just – it's just a different game. And you watch like where they're hitting the ball and how good they are already. I think it's totally different game. They come in maximized, whether it's with how far to hit it. I don't know, like course management intel is kind of more it's a sellable commodity, as we've seen. Like it's not necessarily like something you gain by experience. Now there's with all the stats and everything, it's easier to become a kind of a better course manager than just a guy who's 35 and been scarred and beat up and kind of knows how to approach a course better than the 20-year-old. I think a lot of it can come from shot length data and stuff like that. I just think it's kind of a new era of golf.
Mm-hmm. The faucet effect.
Yeah. I think it kind of plays into what happened with like the Webb. I think it was 10 wins from Webb.com graduates last year or tour finals grads. So of the 50 guys that either got their card back or got their card through the web.com, won. 10 of them won. And that's kind of crazy to me. It signals that there's such an influx of talent that it's the lines between tours are getting blurred. And really, if you win on one tour, you'd probably that same week be in the top five on the PGA Tour if you played, with the golf you played. And it makes me think that, eventually we might have a problem where too much talent is below the PGA Tour because there just frankly aren't enough spots to get up year in and year out.
Yeah. What do you think of that like major window contention that your reader or subscriber mentioned? Like, do you really think that's 27, like is Ricky now kind of getting on the outer edges of that and stuff like
that? Yeah, that was the thing, that was the example he used, and it was like, he pulled it from a pod when I don't remember which one, but he's going to win a major, and his whole point was like he might not win a major because he's actually passed. But that being said, I think majors require a little bit more seasoning and experience. Like, we've seen like Hideki has been so close so many times, and it's kind of crazy that, the emphasis, there's only four events that really matter in terms of a player, like how we remember players a year. I don't think anybody's going to go down and say, oh, Justin Thomas won the FedEx Cup in 2017. What a season. They're going to say, oh, he won the PGA Championship and five other events, or four other events, right? So
five total.
So that's,
I mean, we're at a year too where we had Sergio win a major this year. So at 40, I believe. So, and we also had two guys under 25 win majors. But I do think that majors are a different animal, and like you said, I mean, it's so random trying to pick any four events a year, but I think to have a big career where you win like 5 or 10, you've got to start young. And that's where Ricky needs to, if he's going to win multiple majors, he needs to probably get one soon. But you can always pick off that one like Sergio did.
So if I said over under Ricky majors at 1.5, what would you guys be doing?
Under. For sure. I mean, I think, I think one's a good number.
I'm going to go over only because I think the more you get in contention, the more chances you have, the more chances you have of one falling in your lap. And he does get – he got in position a lot this year. Now, he didn't play well on Sunday, and he's got to fix that. But the more you get in position, the more one's just going to come your way.
I mean, Thomas just had kind of Ricky's entire career in one season. You know, 5 wins and a major and a FedEx Cup title. Like, that's – I don't know. I'm not. It's an exceptional season. This isn't meant as like kind of a shot at Ricky, but you know, it's like another kind of example of how getting it early can kind of free you. Like maybe you need to take your shots when you're 23, 24, 25, and as you get to 30 and over, it's, you know, that window to do those kind of big things, and that kind of big year closes.
Yeah, I don't think Thomas's season is getting enough due because we saw Spieth do it 2 years ago. If Spieth hadn't had his 2015, I think Thomas would be getting so much more credit and should be getting so much more credit for what he did this year.
I think the other thing is that, like, if he had won, you know, at the Tour Championship, he would have been the first player with 6 wins since Tiger in a season.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. That's madness. I mean, he has every kind of skill, and I think he's a perfect example of the, you know, putting doesn't matter adage is like completely idiotic in this day and age, since like the biggest increase in statistics, like, and you saw it on his goals, was putting. And he talked about how he worked on his putting a ton, and all of a sudden he won a ton as opposed to contending a ton. But in terms of, you know, if you were, I think you got Spieth, JT and Rahm are the clear 3 guys under 25, and I almost feel like putting Rahm in the same stratosphere as those two is wrong, but you see him at 5th in the rankings 1 year into his career. So what, you know, of those 3 guys, like, you know, if obviously Jordan's got a big head start on majors, but say we're starting the clock at 0 right now, who would you kind of put your chips in on ending with the most if they all had 0 right now?
I mean, it's hard to, like, all right, so set it back at 0.
Yeah.
But I'm still going to use the knowledge, like the kind of institutional knowledge that I've seen what Spieth has done at majors. I don't know, it's hard to say. Like, I think Spieth, say he has none right now, I still think he ends up with more than the other two. Right, just because of what we've seen him do. I guess that's maybe cheating a little bit, but I think he kind of is, and like we talk about the parity and the depth and all this stuff, and I wonder if it's harder to become like a truly like legendary player and win like 8 majors and things like that. I think Spieth's like the one exception that kind of, that the only exception that we've seen so far that can kind of stick out from what's like a crowded and maximized group of players that are 25 and under. So I would still say, based on everything we see week to week, even if it's not a major, Spieth is the clear choice for me there.
I still would probably go Spieth. I think, again, cheating and using our previous info, there's something, just that guy's mind is, I don't know, there's just, he just does something when it's Sunday down the stretch, and you can't teach that, you can't game that, I don't think.
Mm-hmm. Plus, I think he might be also be another exception to the kind of longevity issue that you talked about earlier. I think maybe the way he plays and the way he swings might set him up to last a little longer than some of those power players. There's also all that fear, like he is so psychotically competitive that there's like a fear of burnout, you know, early and young. But I think he's one of the players that are under 25 that are best set up to have kind of to contend deep into their 30s and even 40s.
Yeah. You know, the crazy thing about Spieth is, like, he didn't putt well this year, and he totally reinvented himself. He was one of the best iron players this year, and he didn't putt well. And he said he thinks it's possible where if he putts like he did in 2015 or even anywhere close to that and irons it like he did this year, I mean, it seems like it would be a pretty scary, pretty dominant combination.
Yeah, that is the scary thing, is he didn't putt well. I don't think the major course is necessarily set up that great for him this year. Like, yeah. Aaron Hill's probably wasn't a great setup for him, given, you know, it was tailor-made for a guy like Brooks Koepka who bombs it and has, like, a perfect week ball striking. But I think, you know, obviously Augusta year in, year out, he's going to be – I mean, he played pretty bad this year and finished in the top – what, did we finish T11th? And I think
– second to last group on Sunday.
So I think the biggest struggle with Spieth will always be the PGA just because of the way it's set up. But I envision – I would have to say I JT is the – he can get so hot, you know, and he can go on runs. Like, I'm really interested to see because this year is as close to a Tiger year outside of, like, Spieth's 15 as we've seen. Is, like, could JT be a guy that consistently – rattles off 4 or 5 wins a year. I mean, it's brutally tough, but he seems like the kind of, he's got the game to do that.
I think so, but I think also he had a good point. He said he's going to talk to Jordan in the off season about how to handle next season, because just like Jordan had to handle 2016 after 2015, he knows that he's going to have to go through the same thing this next season, and the frustration of people asking, it's been 5 weeks, why haven't you won, and that kind of stuff, and because he's not going to match this past season. I don't think he can. It would be insane. And so there's going to be some fall off, and so he's going to have to deal with that, which I think will be interesting to see. I don't know that we're going to ever see again a guy who's going to win 5 times a year for consecutive seasons.
Yeah, it's big cats lurking out there in New York. How's he look, Smart?
Looks fit. Looks thin. Yeah,
looks he fit. Looks, can't imagine. Looks fit. Tiger. That's he looks. He's always in athleisure gear, and he's looking fit. He started the athleisure trend before it was a thing. Just always in his Nike get up.
He had sleeves on today. But yeah, he looked thin. He didn't look like, I don't know, he looked good. I could see him hitting some 60-yard shots out here.
Poor ass, you should roll up there and, you know, kind of hang around him with a monster this week when you get in town.
I think I'm gonna make the drive up. It's a short little trip up to Jersey, so join Smartin, kind of just follow Tiger around.
You guys got any favorite moments from the season while we're still on 2016, 2017? Anything you're gonna remember that might fly under the radar?
Moments. I think that like Ludacris concert that opened the Tour Championship was a big kind of under the radar moment. Big win for the Tour, for golf. No. I think, and we already talked about him, and it's because of the distance, the time between now and then, it's kind of faded a little bit. But looking back over the season, that Rahm shot into 18 at Torrey Pines to win it from 260 yards. And then obviously the eagle putt that converted it. I think that was like that's a low-key underrated moment that kind of, we lost in the shuffle as the season progressed, and Spieth won, and Sergio won, and all these things happened. Like, I'll always remember that. That I think it was five. What I can't remember what he hit over. You know, we saw JB Holmes lay up there. I think the year before, and he ended up making a par there. And Rahm was leading at the time, just ripped that over that, you know, water to the back of the green, and then made the eagle comebacker. I think that was like a really cool highlight and one of the shots of the year for me that we've kind of lost in the shuffle.
Porath, I don't know if you get it, but Ludacris is from Atlanta, which is where the Tour Championship was, so there was synergy there.
Gotcha.
I don't know if you knew that. Underrated moment of the year, I think, was Charles Howell's playoff loss at Quicken Loans, because it shows that guy's career, and then what happened there shows just how hard it is to win, because he's so good. And that putt he hit was so good, and it lips out. And the guy has 2 career wins, and he's, what, 37 or whatever? And I don't know. I just think, I mean, I'm not going to recount all the good shots because there were so many. I mean, I think Brendan was out there, but Justin Thomas' shot on 17 at Quail Hollow, and, like, the way he handled it was amazing. He was, like, he was alpha there. He was, like, stone cold, no emotion. That was very impressive. But on the flip side, we talk about guys winning and how many will they win and all that. And I don't know, that Charles Howell putt was like less than millimeters from going in and him winning the tournament, and it doesn't, and it just kind of shows that like how hard of a game this is and how hard winning is.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, like, to go along with that, Kevin Chappell finally slayed the dragon after he had, like, six runner-ups the year before, or six top threes, and finally got his first win this year. I would say my moment, like, just the return of Patrick Cantlie. I mean,
yeah,
I was so stoked. I was asking, I had gotten to the point where I was asking people on, like, Reddit if anybody knew what was going on with Patrick Cantlie, like, in the beginning of the year. And then, like, sure enough, he popped in at the AT&T, and like, you know, the thing I always remember about Patrick Cantlie was, like, you know, this is the guy that overshadowed Jordan Spieth.
He was so good.
I mean, he had one of the most remarkable, like, stretches of the amateur career, like, in pro tournaments and just in general ever. And then just had, like, you know, personal tragedy and also, like, a horrific injury problems. And he's still only 25, and he made East Lake with 12 events. You know, you always wonder, like, how long we're going to have the guy around just because of the back and how much he'll be able to play. But now he's in every major, every WGC. And I really wouldn't be surprised to see him, A, get into the winner's circle, but B, become, you know, a major force in majors, because, I mean, he's got the whole package when it comes to the golf game. I mean, he's probably one of the top five most well-rounded players out there right now.
You think he gets on the Ryder Cup team next year?
That would be it'll be, you know, the Ryder Cup next year and just the President's Cup, like, even the President's Cup this year, like, it's so interesting because the game's gone so young, and it's traditionally been kind of like an old boys club pick for especially the Ryder Cup. Like, what do you guys see a lot of veterans getting the nod over, like, young guys, like, potentially a Patrick Cantlie, or, you know, what do you do? What do you think? Like, because traditionally it's always been experience over youth, but, like, now we're seeing the game change so much. Do you think it's going to reflect it with captain's picks?
No.
I just floated it out there informally that Cantlie should get consideration for a President's Cup pick this year, and I got just roasted for that. But, I mean, if you look what the guy did in limited action, I mean, he definitely at least deserved a look and at least to be in the conversation.
No, I don't think it's going to change. I don't. I think the captains are coming from an era where that wasn't the case. Now maybe when, you know, we get into, like, a new captaincy era, but I think, like, we're going to see captains that are like Furyk, that are like Stricker, that are going to go for experience if the experience is kind of within the realm of, you know, being justifiable as a pick. So I don't think that's going to change.
What?
Whether we want it to or not, you know, I mean, I just don't think it's going to change.
When's the big cat getting the nod
for captain?
Yeah,
mid-20s.
Wasn't it abroad? I thought it was going to be maybe the one in Italy. I don't know, because it's going to go. I don't know. I hate talking about the Ryder Cup so much in advance. It's just like, you know, got the President's Cup this week.
Yeah.
But
I think you got to pick them for a overseas one, because they'll come up with, like, an infiltration plan and, you know, map it all out.
You'll have this, like, behind enemy lines mentality. It'll be, he'd be perfect for going abroad.
I also want to know what the pods would be named, you know?
Hey, so can we real quick? Yeah, so you mentioned Chappell. I went to January with Rom, and Spartan mentioned the Quicken Loans in July. What did you guys? None of us mentioned anything from the playoffs. What did you guys think of the playoffs overall and the Tour Championship? I don't know if it was my own, like, personal burnout, but I just, you know, that Northern Trust kind of popped a little bit because of the Spieth versus DJ thing, but I don't know. We had good winners. Thomas won it. I just wasn't in on it. And especially the Tour Championship.
Yeah.
Smartin, you're not allowed to, you got to censor yourself here.
I don't know what you're talking about. No, but I think I'm not a big football guy myself, so I can't relate, but, like, it takes a very obvious effect when football starts. So that's why I'm definitely stoked for 2019 when we finish before football. Like, I don't understand the nation's obsession with football. I don't follow through on it. I'm a contrarian, but it is definitely a real effect on golf, and so that hurts it. But for the golf itself, the playoffs, I think they succeeded, and I think it's just because we just have these players separating themselves. Like the top five in the FedEx Cup this year, I think going into BMW, was the same as the top five in the world rankings. So it just shows there were five guys who just, no matter what you were measuring them by, they were dominant, and that's cool to see. I think it was the top five going into Eastlake had, I think I calculated it was like 15 wins this season, which is the most ever for the top five. So that was the cool thing this season, was you had five guys who were definitely the best this year, and they performed. But I think, unfortunately, I think it is a little bit of burnout, and I think then the football effect is real.
Yeah, I had this like little thing called my wedding, and that was right in the middle of the playoffs, so I was a little distracted. But obviously, football just is absolute killer, and it's ironic that the best, you know, the most remembered playoff event was the one that was before football started.
Right. Yeah.
With the Glen Oaks finish. But like in general, like, you know, something I forgot that they had this reset with the Tour Championship. And I think that is like the dumbest thing in the world. Like, because like Justin Thomas won, but like if anybody but like Justin Thomas, Spieth or DJ won, it was like a really flawed system because nobody had nearly as good of a year as those three guys.
Nobody says that when the New England Patriots lose to the Giants in the Super Bowl. You got to perform in the postseason. Come on.
Smart.
When they started Sunday morning, because I hadn't like really been dialed in. I was like kind of watching in and out. I think like a field of 30, like you really need, I don't know, you need some crazy shit to be happening to really give it some juice, or you just need a format change. But when I like Sunday morning, I like dove in. It's like, yeah, Paul Casey in the driver's seat to win the FedEx Cup. I was like, what? Like what?
Yeah,
like what?
Spieth pulled out on 10 to get in it, and then Spieth and Thomas were tied for a little bit, which Thomas had great quotes afterwards.
It shouldn't exist, really. Like to Andy's point, like Paul Casey can win the FedEx Cup. He hasn't won all year.
He hasn't won since
2013. I know. And he didn't need, like, a ton of crazy stuff to happen. He just needed, like, Thomas to finish outside the top three and Spieth outside the top five, like, where they were.
He was top five in all the playoff events and then would have won the Tour Championship.
I agree. Yeah. Like, Paul
Casey. It's like an 8 seed. He's a Cinderella. He's George Mason, making it to the Final Four.
I think that is, like, the thing that people need to embrace, maybe. And it's, you know, like, long term, like somehow the FedEx Cup playoffs have to become like to a major level before they like people care about them. But like with Paul Casey, yeah, I think people do need to look at it maybe, and that is a good way to look at it, is the NCAA tournament, like where upsets happen and not necessarily the best player wins. But the problem is it's $10 million. Like Paul Casey would have won. What, $11.5 million for winning one tournament?
I think it's hard to like sell it all year as like this season long pursuit, and then I don't know, like the formula gets flipped around in the last event.
Well,
you know,
yeah,
I understand it's still weighted, but
if you play well in any other sport in the regular season, your path to the championship is easier.
Sure.
So like if I have a good college, you know, if I'm a good college basketball team and I'm a 2 seed, my path to the championship is easier than a 7 seed. Oh, it's actually the same. Then maybe like a 9 seed, but then also I need to play well to get farther. So it's kind of both, you know, that you play well in the regular season and it makes your path to the championship easier, but you still have to perform in the postseason. You guys are just missing the boat, man.
We got Sean Monahan here litigating the case for
Cup. My bonus is going to be so big this year.
Yeah, seriously. Like, Kevin Kisner, like, that would have been a guy that, like, I could have gotten behind, like, if he had won and won.
Sure.
He won, like, this year. He was, like, in the mix a ton. And Paul Casey's, like, always in the mix. But, like, it just would have been bad. It would have been a bad look. I mean, they got lucky that JT won. But I just don't think there's a good way to make a playoff system for golf. I think it's just tough.
if I could fix something, I think we're too overly reliant on the projections. We get started in the projection game way too early, and that's what I don't like about it.
You gotta get FedEx's brand up on the Tallcast, man.
It's true.
That's a contract.
Do you think NCAA's has any, you know, settles? Is there some sort of like individual title out there that you feel like produces like a usually like an elite type winner, whether it's USAM or something like that? Is there a format out there that in an individual
Western
contest?
Western AM is pretty sweet.
Which one?
Western AM. But
Western AM is strong.
My other issue is that like the golf, if you're going to make the playoffs be important, pick some damn good golf courses. Like, play like great golf courses. Like, if you, that's one way that they could make the playoffs sweet, is if you played like awesome, awesome golf courses. Like, take some of that FedEx money, like, and be like, all right, we're gonna pay up to play LACC for the week.
You know, we're going to Aronimink next year.
That's awesome. But like, East Lake's still there. who's in like No Jones course should ever host the finals of something that decides $10 million winner. it's like, what else is, who's the New York host next year?
I'm Wikipediaing that one right now. Hold on.
That's Ridgewood. So Tilly.
That's a good one. Yeah.
Tilly and Gas.
There we go. We got a Tilly. We got a little Hans Reno. Or no, Core Crenshaw Reno. Who did Aronimink?
Hans.
Yeah.
I mean, it's probably about as good as it's going to get. But the other issue is like you're just excluding half the country, or not even half, like the entire country. Nobody else. They're all on the East Coast.
Well, everyone in LA is watching the Rams, so we can't put a playoff event out there.
I think it's easy to bag on the FedEx Cup. Like, it's just easy. It's a punching bag. It's, like, easy to talk shit about it. I think it's overall good. It's obviously better than what we had. But, yeah, there's always going to be ways to perfect it and make it better and bitch about it, for sure.
Yeah, you guys need me to bring the wisdom. You guys are just group thinkers. I'm bringing the hot contrarian takes.
That is awesome. It is a contrarian.
Northern Trust goes from Ridgewood next year to Liberty National. Ugh. It's a little course. I guess it's on the East River, maybe, or no. Where is that? That's in New Jersey, across from the Statue of Liberty. Reliably. Plainfield, Bethpage, Liberty National, Bethpage. So.
Wow, Liberty National really fits in with Ridgewood, Plainfield, Bethpage. Like, that's like right there with them, like a same tier course. It's, you know, it's the most amazing.
If Shinny wanted to open its gates, I'm sure we would be more than happy to have it on there. It's a two-way street here.
No, those other courses are great, though. Like, you know, Liberty National, the fact that it costs $250 million to build this course is like, might be the greatest heist of all time.
I don't even know what to say to that.
I mean, it's they built a beautiful piece of art on an otherwise a super fun toxic dump.
They were limited with what they could do, but you know, they didn't need to limit the strategy of the golf course.
Yeah, it went from super fun to super fun.
So, hey, President's Cup, what do you guys I mean, like, it seems like everybody's saying that, many are saying the Internationals have no chance.
Gosh, they need to play well. I'm going to go in there and rile them up tonight. They need to get on their horses and play well.
So who do you think, like, they have to have, like, the usuals? The horses have to play well?
Hideki needs to get over the PGA. Hideki shot 61 at Bridgestone, almost won the PGA, and then I think that took a lot out of him. I think it was a tough loss for my man, because he's been down ever since.
I think one of the issues with the international team is like all the languages, because like I don't necessarily think that they pick the best team year in year out because of language barriers. Because like you can't play a good team format if the team can't communicate with each other. Like if I can't talk to my best ball partner or alternate shot partner about, like, what he's doing, like, how are we supposed to be, like, a good team on the golf course?
I think it was Shackford had an interesting take. I think the U.S. Walker Cup team was playing alternate shot the way that you're supposed to play it, where, like, one guy goes to the tee, and the next guy walks out to the fairway like a four caddy, and then he just hits. So instead of the two of them just chumming it up and talking and getting too much information, which I think people do, I think they overthink some of these team formats, like an alternate shot, just go to the next spot and hit your shot from there, and don't, you know, if you don't have a, you don't play with a partner all year, try to make it as similar to that as possible. So I think, I don't know. I don't think that's the problem. I think it's just, and the U.S. team is deep.
Well, who were the picks this year? The international, Griot and Lahiri?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're, you know, stateside players who know there's not a barrier there. You know, I don't know. I mean,
Price said he was going for that. He's going for the PGA Tour players who know each other.
I think that's, I mean, if that's the case, if Andy, if that has merit, then that's like kind of an indictment on the entire enterprise and the entire competition. Like that, I mean, it just, that shouldn't be. Like then, like the whole setup is not, you know.
There weren't a lot of great options for International Presidents Cup picks this year. The guys on the bubble were not playing well.
Yeah. I mean, if there's like a language barrier that's preventing them from maybe putting like the 12 best or the 12, you know, or that you know negatively impacts even the best number one versus two, you know, Hideki and Jason Day can't play together because of their, or you know, can't play well together because of the language thing, that's like kind of an indictment on the entire competition and the purpose of it and the value of it. I don't know if there's merit to that whole language barrier thing.
Yeah, the one thing, the U.S. team might be exhausted from all the good golf they've played, so that could be, all that good golf could be a barrier. That's what they need to hope for, at least from the international side.
I mean, I kind of like the international team. Like, it's got like a lot of like cult golf heroes. Like, you got the Mattress King, you got Big Leash.
You have some big game hunters who need to big game hunt this week.
You know, I don't know if you guys heard, but Brandon Grace shot the lowest major round of all time this year. You got Hot Charles. I mean, they got a good team.
It's good, but we say this every 2 years. It's good, but it's not, you know, top to bottom. Doesn't compare.
I feel like Jonathan Vegas could be Jonathan Vegas's week. I feel a big Jonathan Vegas week potentially coming on, even though he did finish last in the Tour Championship.
Is that because you're writing a Jonathan Vegas article?
It's part of that, but I think too he's very energetic and enthusiastic. He's a big hitter. I don't know. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I just think that he could be a guy who could energize that side.
I think Big Woo Woo could too. I think Siwoo Kim.
What's he done? I love him, but I don't. What's he done since?
He hasn't done much.
He's had injury problems again, right?
Let's talk, though, like, we just talked about Xander Schauffele at the beginning of this, 23-year-old. Like, Siwoo Kim is 21.
Yeah.
He's won a Players by 3 shots, and he won the Wyndham by, like, 5 at age...
Shot 60, yeah.
19 or whatever he was. He's the youngest player ever to earn a PGA Tour card. So young that he couldn't play because he had to sit until he was 18. And, also, he's playing golf as a 21-year-old in a foreign country where he doesn't speak that language. Like, how? Like, if Siwoo Kim was an American, everybody would have like a raging boner for him.
I think the problem is he's good. The back straight, he's withdrawn a lot this year, and then. I mean, his only top 25 other than the Players since then is a T13 at the U.S. Open. It hasn't been good this year after the Players. He was so good there, and it's just been so bad ever since.
Yeah.
Who's a good partner for him this week? Who are they thinking?
Hideki?
I don't know. I think they do this thing I think the international team just needs to make power pairings. Instead of, like, trying to get a veteran with a new guy, you just got to go, like, Adam Scott and Leishman together. Put, like, Hideki and, I don't know, Oosthuizen. Like, you just need to just stack. And you run the risk, if those guys lose, you've lost a point to your best players. But I don't know. I think you just got to stack that team.
Well, they're not going to break up Oosthuizen and Grace, right? They're the ones that are undefeated in Korea.
And Scott and Hideki play well together, so they might have those pairings for them. I don't know. I don't know who he's going to go with.
Like, so, I mean, like, I don't think the bottom half of the like, I think they're pretty comparable at the top with Day and Hideki. But at the bottom, like, Kevin Chappell, Charlie Hoffman, I guess, yeah, Griot's been really bad this year, too.
Yeah, it's just, you look
hasn't
through,
been very good.
Lately. You look through these rosters through history, it's like, Nico Hearn at the bottom, even Laney or Leaney, whatever, you know, a lot of weird, like, there's just like those last four. Bobby Allenby, he's featured prominently through the
fairness,
history of this.
In fairness, that was the year that Stephen Leaney was the runner-up at the U.S. Open.
All right, well, there you go. He had a runner-up.
And Bob Allenby was like a top-five player in the world
Bob
for,
Allenby
like,
I
know.
For a while.
I know, he's like, he was on this, he's on these rosters like every other year, you know, every time until... He ran a foul late in his career.
he ran into Anthony Kim.
Oh, yeah.
That was the beginning of the end.
I think he should be kind of just like an honorary member of the team every year. Just kind of, this event needs juice. It's all manufactured anyways. Bring in some kind of hotheads, a couple of shit talkers. Allenby should be kind of an honorary member of the international team. Just kind of mix it up.
I feel like the international team should get to pick two players from Europe.
Wow. That's not a bad idea.
It should be a weird mix. What would you call it? I mean, I guess there's still the international team, but it's such a weird...
Me against the world.
Yeah.
It's tough. I would love to see a team golf competition that's modeled after the college NCAAs.
And yeah.
Everybody's like, well, countries don't have enough players. Like, I think you'd have Canada, you'd have the States, you'd have Japan, you'd have China, you'd have Australia, New Zealand, I bet South Korea. You could field, like, South Africa, you know, a ton of European countries. You could get at least 16 teams in there, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Or you'd be like, what about, like, four-man teams from continents? Do the Continent Cup.
I think you have enough for countries. Actually, the guy who, Kyle Robbins, who works for SB Nation, wrote a big thing right after NCAA about how this would work. I mean, he put 16 teams in there. I mean, it's, yeah, sure, it gets thin towards the bottom. But, yeah, I think it's a great potential format, you know, coming out of, you know, you had the Zurich Classic that mixed it up. You had, you know, NCAAs keeps delivering, like, every year. You know, now that it's like a TV event, like, that's been awesome to watch, the match play part of it. I don't know. You get countries, whether it's the random, like, Italy, India, like, these guys, they can at least put four in there. And, yeah, of course, it gets thin towards the bottom, but that's the nature of, like, a bracket. You need a 16 seed.
I mean.
But they're still good enough to beat a one if it broke the right way.
And if you get, like, the battleship playing that course that the Hero Indian opens at, SSP Charlie.
Yeah,
if you get him playing there against Ricky Fowler, Ricky Fowler has no chance.
Yeah, I mean, you got every country in Europe can field four guys, you know, not every country, but the golf countries.
You gotta,
I mean,
be five guys. But
you
look,
think five?
Belgium would have a team because they got Kolsarts, Dietrich,
all the,
Peters.
All the Thomases.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, they've got guys, England, Wales, Scotland, Ireland. It would be a really cool event. And I think one of the great things about golf, like, I mean, it would highlight some of these, like, challenge tour guys for the European tour. And, like, imagine seeing one of those guys, like, beat Jordan Spieth. Like, I mean, that's like NCAA tournament when, like, the 2 seed loses the 15 seed. You know,
we should get the World Amateur Team Championship to go to the NCAA format.
That's,
so
You got a dog in the background?
Yeah, what's going on back there? It's getting a little chirpy.
Dog's barking to be outside, go outside. She's not like locked up in her Chicago apartment, so she sees squirrels.
I heard you talking about Liberty National getting feisty. Can we talk a little bit about the course? How's it looking, Smart? And you're already on scene there.
I was only out. I only saw a couple holes. Took some Insta, trying to build my Insta following. So edited those up real quick.
What's the handle? You gotta plug your handle so let the people know.
It's PJ Tour Smartin. I'm one brand. Poor Arthur's disgusted.
Got the tour in there.
Yeah. No, I think, you know, I think TV kills some things, and so yeah, I know you can see the Statue of Liberty from here, and you can see the skyline, but it is pretty sweet. It is. I mean, I've got to say, I've never been here before. I've never really done New York. It's pretty cool. Course is very lush right now.
Lush.
I think it'll be interesting. You can get into some trouble here. Seems like you got to drive it straight. Not a lot of width, but I mean, you definitely have to ball strike it. Therefore, and I think if you look at the guy, ball strikers, Adam Scott won here. Did I lose you guys?
I got you.
You're okay.
You're good.
Okay. Adam Scott won here. I know Kevin Chappell was in contention that year. He's got the course record. Tiger played well that year. Heath Slocum won in 09, but he held off a murderer's row of runners up. So I think it's going to be a ball striking golf course. I don't know who that helps or who that hurts, but you can get some penalties pretty quick and rack up some strokes. So you could have some pretty good match play turns.
So I think for people like us who are kind of like deep in the golf, we want to see a good course. We'd rather see a good course than just some kind of like, you know, cookie cutter thing, or I'm not saying this one is necessarily, but does the course matter for match play? This is just kind of a TV event. It's an exhibition, you know, in theory. Does it matter?
I think this will play well on TV because you do have the good visuals. I mean, Royal Melbourne, I think.
Obviously,
next time. But I think this will play well on TV because it is, yeah, good visuals. It's a beautiful golf course, and I think that'll help with the presentation. But it is pretty. It seems pretty penal. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out in match play.
Yeah, I saw a lot of hazard line fairways.
A lot of spray paint.
Lots of bunkers on outsides of dog legs, which I can't stand. But
we did. Good views. They did mow the fairway into the bunkers, though. So we got that.
That's good. I think people will think it's really cool. Like you see those late afternoon rounds with the sun going down and the skyline in the background. Like, you know, the general golf fan will think it's really awesome. I mean, for match play, I think it, you can have really great match play courses which heighten match play, but in the end of the day, I don't think people will love a team competition and like this. It's funny. One of my buddies was at the BMW and I walked with him for a couple holes, like the most casual golf fan, you know, went to the event cause he had free tickets. So I was walking with him and I was like, are you having fun here? And he goes, not really. I don't know if I'd ever come back to something like this. I was like, well, what do you, he's like, the Ryder Cup's more my jam, like, or the President's Cup. And I was like, why? And he said, because I like having a team to root for, just like other sports. So, like, I think that aspect of team golf is what I think, you know, that's a way to spice up, like, more stuff with golf is to have more team formats. Because people want to have people to root for. You know, I talked with Kyle on our mailbag pod about, like, how much different golf would be if it was a team sport in different cities. Like, just like we were talking about basketball at the beginning, like, if all of a sudden, like, we made a trade for Daniel Berger and we traded, you know, Phil and future cash considerations of Chicago, like, how much different golf would be? But, like, you'd have a different fan base. Like, you'd have more casual fans.
Yeah, the one problem there is that would they be playing for something that matters? Like, would you, like, whatever this team trophy is, and I think, I mean, it takes time for anything to really matter, but that's what it would have to be, too. You'd have to have, so, like, you could make a Boston team, but unless they're playing for something that really matters to those people, I don't know if they'd get into it. That's the one. I don't know how you do that, per se.
You also wouldn't have the crooked media just writing about, you know, five, six guys. Every, you know, five, six guys taking up 98% of the content, the oxygen.
Right. And, yeah. All of a sudden, then there'd be, like, the guys that are the five guys would be, like, the weed of the city. Like, get this bum out of here.
Yeah, then you're gonna care about like the 10th guy in your lineup, which brings all new names into the into it.
I mean, like when the Bulls had Keith Bogans, everybody was all over Keith Bogans. Like, get this bum off the team. Like, it'd be like, oh, we've got you know, Kevin Chappell never makes a putt and down the stretch. Like, get this guy out of here. Like, it would also like lead to like a sports race. Oh man, it'd be kind of crazy.
So many hot takes would be thrown about.
Skip and Shannon.
Hold on
a
second.
Prominently.
Let me go get my fucking dog.
Andy's going to take care of this dog situation. All right, what should we talk about while he's gone? What's his dog's name? Rainer?
Come here. Rainer.
Oh man!
Everything good up there?
Yeah. Okay. I think it.
I'm it excited definitely... to get up there.
Oh, here we go. Little Alistair himself.
Martin just asked if the dog's name is Rainer.
Violet. It's my wife's dog. The dog came with my wife.
Alistair, CB.
No. God, she gets so excited about squirrels that...
Let her out there. Just balls and squirrels.
No, she can't stay. She won't. Then she'll be scared out there by herself.
Well, you need a tree removal program on the on your property. No squirrels. Get rid of... Take the trees out. The squirrels are gone.
Tree City, USA. We can't remove any trees in Lake Bluff. All right, where were we? Oh, talk about.
I think you got to keep that in there.
Yeah. So the team sports would be a game changer. I don't think it would be great for the silly season.
Where would you fit it in? Would you make new events?
The silly season.
Okay.
Not the wraparound. What is it called now? The fall series.
No, it's wraparound. No, is it wraparound? It's not fall series anymore.
It's the wraparound. It's like the NBA. No. This was 2016-17.
The
European Tour did this way before we did. No one lost their mind about that.
I just don't think you're going to get big names to commit to that kind of stuff. You know, not kind of consistently. I think you can get like the. I mean, you can hopefully get, you remember that idea they talked about in Detroit last year with like the Quicken or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Ricky versus Rory and a like celebrity partner or whatever.
I think, man, those would be cool. If you get them on network TV on like a weekday, like, I mean, those things were awesome. It was like Tiger and Sergio playing on a Monday evening on ABC.
I think that should be part of the FedEx Cup is that during practice rounds, there should be televised matches between people. And maybe that's what you do. Sweet. You do it during practice round days.
Yeah.
Once a month.
Some guys barely play practice rounds anymore. They just come up for the pro-am.
Why would you need to? You play the same course every single year.
I know, but then, you know, guys aren't going to want to be messing with their schedule, unfortunately. Yeah,
that's true. It's
a good inventory for PGA Tour Live or, I don't know, Golf Channel can show it instead of Bagger Vance or something. They want to pay for it. You know, like there's people will watch that stuff. PGA, whether it's Golf Channel or PGA Tour Live, I don't know.
Totally.
I'm more of a golf fix guy. I love being yelled at for an hour. You guys want to do some overrated, underrated?
Love to.
Yeah.
Let's start with the President's Cup. Overrated or underrated?
I'll go first. I think it's underrated now because everyone's bags on it all day. You know, it's like, oh, it's not the Ryder Cup. It's not competitive. I mean, what the hell? It's something that's, you know, better than whatever else would be here this weekend. So I think it's I think it's underrated. It's exciting. It's always fun to see team match play events. We just don't, you know, we only get them once a year. So I think it's kind of underrated at this point. I'm not going to go to bat for it and claim it's like some grand, you know, one of the most important events in the game, but I think it's underrated because it's, you know, beat on so much.
All right. My crooked media take, since I'm in bed with Big Tour, I do think it's underrated. So I'm glad Brendan paved the path for me. But I think one thing that's not being talked about is last time they had the rules changes where it's fewer points. So that helps the international team because it's less about depth, because obviously they get hurt at the end of their lineup. And it was a 1-point contest. So hopefully this thing will be close. I think there's a good chance it'll be close because, you know, before there were so many more points in the Ryder Cup and the internationals getting killed by the back of their lineup. So we could have a chance.
It was brutal. Brutal.
But
double sessions, entire roster, or at least, you know, five matches instead of four.
But Nick Price went to bat hard for fewer matches and he got it. And I think that helped this thing a lot. So I think we could have a close one again. And I think finally, at one point, the international team is going to win in the U.S. and it's going to be awesome.
Are you rooting for the international team?
Oh yeah, so hard. Globalist.
I think I might actually be rooting for him too. I think it's underrated too. It just gets ragged on too much. Like, one of my favorite golf moments from my youth was watching Ernie Els and Tiger just go blow to blow. And where was that? Forgot where.
South Africa.
Yeah, South Africa.
Vancourt, right?
That thing was crazy.
That was unbelievable.
If that thing was going on when we had Twitter, Twitter would have been exploded for that. Was around back then,
and people would rightfully know that Ernie Els was the second best player of that generation. Phil would have crumbled in that situation.
Your argument gets hurt by retrospect. In the moment, in 2003, Ernie was the second best player in the world. The problem is now when we look back through retrospect and we forget that so many of Phil's wins came later.
That's after the ball, and also, you know, after. He, like, needs money now. Ernie doesn't need money. Phil needs money.
Does Phil need money?
Yeah.
What is this? All right. Okay.
But, all right.
Seems like a topic for off the record.
Often talked about being underrated. Is Mark Leishman overrated or underrated?
I'm going to go first. I hate that when people take a guy... like, especially the media, which I'm part of, and they're like, this guy is so underrated. And I'm like, aren't we the guys that have the most contribution on how rated a guy is? Like, if a guy's underrated, it's because, well, A, fans might not be paying enough attention, but B, like, we're not covering him enough. So that, I think that he was underrated and he'll be underrated in 2 weeks, but right now overrated because so many media members trying to look woke are leaping on the Mark Leishman is underrated. You guys don't know what you're talking about if you don't know how good he is. Bandwagon.
I agree with that.
It's like people saying like, yeah, you know, this young guy coming up from Japan. I think he can win. His name's Hideki Matsuyama. It's like these casual like golf fans. Oh yeah, by the way, he's number 3 in the world. You know, like they just throw these names out because it's not, you know, Tiger, Speed, his name, you know. Of course, he's underrated. If you don't ever talk about him and highlight him, I have no comment on Leishman.
Well, like
I'm going to abstain.
It's like you said that like five guys dominate the airwaves.
Right. I'm going to abstain on Leishman. I think he's a good guy, great player, and I don't know. He's properly rated. You know, our friends like to go to bat for him quite a bit.
What about the Web Tour Finals? Overrated? Underrated?
I probably need to recuse myself just because it's one of the events that's held at course close, near and dear to my heart, where I've caddied and played 1,000 times. So
they're definitely getting deep media coverage this week, being in the backyard of a few of our friends.
Yeah.
I'm going to say underrated, though, but I'm in a unique position like a couple of us are where you know some of the guys. So it's actually like people you know and consider friends playing for their jobs. I don't know how much – this is the issue I had with Tron, and I told him on the text that – he was talking about how the Web Finals is better than the Tour Championship. And I was like, yeah, not if you're the general golf fan. If you're the general golf fan, you want to see Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas trying to win things. But for people like us, you're watching guys you know battle for their jobs, and so they're underrated.
Yeah, I think it's super underrated. What do you think, Andy?
I think it's underrated, and it's just grossly underpaid. That's the thing I think is sick, is how how the FedEx Cup, this guy's playing for $10 million, and then
yeah,
like, these guys can't even cover their expenses if they finish T40th on the Web.com Tour.
Ben Hogan would have been disgusted if he knew how much Web.com Tour players were making.
Yeah, that was Ben you Hogan playing in the 1950s.
Ben Hogan had to eat oranges out of a citrus grove to
That's what they
himself.
Have to do, too.
I like the old school feel. They stay with all these like host families and everything. Like, you know, some stay in hotels. A lot of them stay with like, you know, host families and stuff like that. Even Bryson last year.
The underrated part of the Web.com Tour Finals is it's the four biggest purses of the year. So, like, even if you're a tour guy who has to go down there, like, you can make some good coin if you play well. Like, yeah. It boosted the overall purse of the Web.com Tour by a decent amount.
Chesson Hadley has made $300,000, and he's got a win and a runner-up.
Also, I tweeted this when Uline won. I think three of the four winners of Web.com Tour Finals events going into this year had won the following season. So... it's showing if you can win out there, you can win on tour.
Chesson Hadley has won and finished runner-up, and he's made less money than the guy that just showed up at East Lake as the 30th guy in a bonus. They made
yeah.
Guy 30th guy gets a bonus of $300,000 for just walking in the door and hitting a tee shot.
But think about how much the 30th best NBA player is making.
That's true. I guess the D-League's
kind of
the
coming
same.
Back to these analogies to other sports when you start questioning the FedEx Cup. Always starts throwing out these other sports.
Even though he's not an other sports guy. He's not an NFL yeah. guy.
I'm a baseball guy. Baseball's my sport.
I saw, by the way, did you see like the bottom nine finishers at East Lake are all Prez Cup players? Like all the guys who came in last, like the last nine spots were all Prez Cups, like peaking, right, giving the event some real juice.
I do kind of wish that they'd had that Sunday after the tour champ pick, so you could have thrown X on the team. That would have been awesome.
Wouldn't have happened, though. Good old boys.
I don't know. If you save that last pick for Sunday night, you got to pick them.
It would have been great if it was between Phil and X.
Yeah.
Going against poor-ass anti-establishment take, I think the one thing that's going to help with captains' picks is more and more captains are talking to their team about who they should pick. So it's not just the captain sitting on high saying, oh, I'm going to take this guy. Like, they're getting input from guys on their team, which I think will help with skew younger.
That could make it more political, though.
But yeah, if you got, like, but if the guy's asking Spieth and JT for, like, who they think they should pick, like, they're going to go bat for guys their age.
Yeah.
Bat for Smiley. People like,
I think Bernhard Langer should make this Ryder Cup team. Right?
I don't know. This is a real take. I don't know.
Real question. Where would Bernhard Langer have finished in the FedEx Cup if he played every event this year?
70th? Yeah.
I don't know. He's a great donut delivery man. Brought his donut to the players. So I've kind of been influenced by that ever since. I mean, I think, why couldn't he play, you know, like three matches at a Ryder Cup and, you know, hold his own?
He's made $3 million.
He's great, but he still hits it like 265.
So? What the hell? Have him do, you know, he could hold his own. Set it up for alternate shot where he's with some big hitters on the, you know, big, where you need big drives.
Every year there's like these new, like this year it was Steve Stricker and Jerry Kelly, and they're like, oh, these two guys are finally going to go up there and just take it to Bernhard. And sure enough, Bernie is just killing everybody again. He might be cheating, but
yeah,
he's
oh, it'd
killing
be great.
Everybody.
You'd have like US team members trying to call him on it, say like he's actually anchoring. There'd be like a lot of drama. You know, they'd say we're not going out. You know, he's anchoring. There would be like some you know, plenty of takes, plenty of you know air to be filled about whether or not he was anchoring. Maybe Phil or somebody, you know, some other vet calls him on it. That'd be great to get him in there.
They should do like that game operation where they put something on his chest, and if the butt end of his putter touches it, it like vibrates loudly, and his nose turns red, and then you know that he anchored.
You've been playing Operation lately?
Yeah, a lot of downtime with the kiddo. He's 11 months, but he's not very good at it.
All right. We'll do one more overrated, underrated. We're going to say Media Center Dining.
God. Good God.
The BMW, underrated. BMW is by far the best. In general, overrated. I like to try to eat healthy, keep myself in at least some decent shape, and it's hard to do when you're on the road.
It's overrated because people won't stop fucking talking about it. It's like, it's the worst. You gotta hear about the media dining, and people gotta come back and tweet about the ice cream sandwich they picked up out of the cooler. Like, people give a shit about that. Like,
maybe at Augusta, but I don't know about most weeks.
Oh, it's always, it's terrible. They always, you know, people, like, they got to tweet out pictures of the buffet, of the dining. It's so overrated because you got to hear so much about it.
You're telling me the Greenbrier week guys are tweeting pictures of ice cream sandwiches. I'm not buying
maybe
that.
Not Greenbrier. Or, you know, if it's not up to snuff, you know, there's some guy out there bitching about, you know, the hot dog's cold or I don't know.
Who are you following on Twitter?
I'm going to issue a statement from Fried Egg HQ, even though we aren't at headquarters right now. But if the Fried Egg's at a tournament, he does not care at all about the dining situation, if it's good or bad. But I will say that the players had spectacular smoothies. I love those things.
Here's the thing, a little off topic, but I'm big on purging Twitter accounts. It's kind of like, you know how there's Stick to Sports? I think I tweeted this, but now during football season, it's Stick to Sports you're paid to cover. Like, if you're tweeting about the NFL all the time or something else random, like, I know people follow me for one reason only. They want golf information. They don't care what I eat, what I'm wearing, where I'm playing. So I only tweet golf info. And if you're going to tweet other stuff, you're rejected.
Totally disagree. I mean, well, if you're like if the person's got a simple mind and is only, you know, capable of being an expert in one area, then fine. You can eject them. But I think a true Renaissance man has the versatility to tweet about multiple things. And I'm going to tweet about, you know, the Indians playoff run coming up. People will probably unfollow me as I'm yelling about the strike zone, stuff like that. I think you need to be versatile and have, you know, multiple interests to deliver to your followers.
Yeah, last year, no one
cares what I'm eating or where I'm playing or what I'm wearing.
Last year,
well, that's just bad content. You know, I think you can tweet well about multiple things and still be good content.
Last year when the Cubs were beating the Indians, I had a hard time not tweeting about it. But I think if it's a branded account, you got to stick in your lane.
Well, yeah.
But if you're a personal, like a personal account, then you can rove.
Yeah, I keep myself unbranded. I'm my own man. I'm not doing PGA Tour Smarton. You got to just be brand. Sean Martin.
He's part of the machine.
Just rage against me.
Hey, who's gonna win the President's Cup?
Internationals.
I think the Americans are gonna roll. It'll be over like early in Sunday singles.
By the way, underrated storyline this week, real quick. ZB Zach Blair, 126 in the FedEx Cup, now 26 on the web priority list. Top 25 get cards. Just living on the bubble. That's a, if you're looking for some other Sunday viewing, that could be some good one.
That was quite a pivot from international, from predictions to web tour bubble boys.
I think ABCC is going to fit him well, too.
Yeah.
I think it's like a really good course for him.
Why?
Maybe. It usually plays really wide and pretty soft, and it's not that long, which helps. But
it's short. Like, you can't hit driver on a lot of holes out there.
Yeah.
So, like, he can still, like, one of his advantages is he can hit driver when other people can't hit driver. So, like, when it, you know, and, oh, shit. And then, and so I think that helps him out a lot there. And I think he hits a pretty, there's some tight holes out there. You got to be precise out there. I like that place.
Overrated, underrated. Assistant captains and captains in general.
Overrated.
I think they're underrated.
Yeah.
Because I think, like, the big cat was running the Ryder Cup team last year, not Davis Love. Davis Love was just a figurehead.
That's what we hear.
Yeah, big cat. I mean, you can't tell me that if Tiger talks, not everybody's listening there. Like, you can't tell me that Tiger doesn't have the most influential voice in that team room.
And, like, a really bad captain can, tank things quickly, like we saw. Wilson. I think it might be underrated. It's a lot of, like, hype and fluff, but, yeah, I think they have an impact.
I think overrated, because the only really error you can make, I think, is over-captaining.
Yeah.
I can see that. I prescribe by the theory of, like, just get out of people's way and let them golf.
Yeah. These guys know what they're doing. They're adults. They wear big boy pants.
All right. Well, I think that's it. I don't think anybody needs to hear us talk anymore. So thanks for coming on, guys. If anybody out there listening
doesn't...
they'll
definitely get their money.
Yeah. If they don't listen to or follow you guys, they should on Twitter. So...
All right, man. Thanks, Andy. Appreciate you having us on.
Later, guys.
See you guys. All right, see you.